This is BOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Western powers called on Monday for calm in Bangladesh after long-ruling leader Sheikh Hasina fled, the United States saluting the military for forming an interim government rather than cracking down further on protesters. The United States called on all sides in Bangladesh to refrain from further violence as bullet-ridden bodies were strewn across hospital floors and looting swept the capital of Dhaka.
Too many lives have been lost over the course of the past several weeks, and we urge calm and restraint in the days ahead.
Now, U.S. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller, Hasina, the daughter of Bangladesh's founding father, had sought to quell a nationwide uprising that started with student-led protests against job quotas. Nearly 100 people were killed on Sunday as calls grew on her to step down. Gaza's Hamas-run health ministry says nearly 40,000 Palestinians have been killed in close to 10 months of fighting. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA.
Palestinian officials say hospitals have stopped functioning and are in urgent need of equipment. Khalil al-Dakran is the spokesperson for the health ministry in Gaza. He says there is an urgent need for beds, medicine, and medical supplies. More than 90% of Gaza's 2 million people have been displaced at least once and are spending the sweltering heat of the summer in tents with no air conditioning and few sanitation facilities. The fighting is showing no signs of letting up, and people on both sides see no hope for an end anytime soon. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
As Iran threatens to respond to the suspected Israeli assassination of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh and Tehran, the regional militias that the Islamic Republic has armed for decades to play a role in that attack. They include Lebanon's Hezbollah, the Houthi rebels of Yemen, Shiite militias in Iraq, and others. This is VOA News. The U.S. State Department said Monday it had been in contact with Brazil, Mexico, and Colombia on a path forward for Venezuela following last week's disputed elections.
When you look at the tallies that the opposition made public, it's clear that even if every outstanding vote came back from Maduro, it wouldn't be enough to overcome the advantage that Edmundo Gonzalez had.
U.S. officials said last week that electoral manipulation had stripped Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro's claim of re-election victory of any credibility, and Washington left the door open to fresh sanctions on the OPEC nation. U.S. Vice President and Democratic Party presidential nominee Kamala Harris is expected to announce her running mate on Tuesday, AP correspondent Shelley Adler.
After a weekend spent interviewing finalists, Vice President Harris must decide on her partner before the two set off Tuesday on a tour across key battleground states. Harris interviewed at least three running mate contenders on Sunday in Washington. They were Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, Arizona Senator Mark Kelly, and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. That's according to a person familiar with the process who spoke to the AP on condition of anonymity to discuss the negotiations. I'm Shelley Adler.
Pope Francis has accepted the resignation of Cardinal Sean O'Malley as Archbishop of Boston and named the current Bishop of Providence, Rhode Island, Richard Henning, to replace him as leader of one of the most important Catholic archdioceses in the United States. The announcement from the Vatican Monday did not mention O'Malley's other main role. He's been the Pope's main advisor on fighting clergy sexual abuse as head of the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors. O'Malley acknowledged on Monday that the terrible scourge of sexual abuse, but says he's full of hope. Elon Musk has filed a second lawsuit against OpenAI and two founders, Sam Altman and Greg Brockman. Musk claims he is suing over betrayal of the ChatGPT maker's founding aims at benefiting the public good rather than pursuing profits. The lawsuit filed in a Northern California federal court called Musk's case a textbook tale of altruism versus greed. In response to the first lawsuit, OpenAI released emails from Musk showing his earlier support for making it a for-profit company. Spokesperson for OpenAI says Elon's prior emails continue to speak for themselves. Recapping one of our top stories, Western powers are calling on calm for Bangladesh after long-ruling leader Sheikh Hasina fled, the United States saluting the military for forming an interim government rather than cracking down on further protesters. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Jacob Zuma is out of the African National Congress, but what will he stay out?
He's very Trumpian in the way that he will issue lawsuits and take everyone to court and try and litigate things. I have no doubt he'll appeal because it'll get him more headlines. It'll make more of his supporters who are still in the ANC wonder whether they shouldn't be leaving for his MK party.
An American woman who runs a nonprofit in Cameroon says the U.S. is capable of doing far more business in that West Central African nation. A female journalist group in Liberia takes steps to change the negative perception of women in media.
Level job, it was not high. I did not know how to write on leave, on real good leave. Sometimes when I read my stories, my editor would be like, what is this, Christophina? What is this?
And the convener of a human rights group in Nigeria says lawyers are ready to provide legal aid to nationwide protesters. Those stories and more coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former South African President Jacob Zuma has 21 days to appeal his expulsion from the governing African National Congress. The party's disciplinary committee expelled the former president and leader of the ANC from the group for violating the party's constitution. Zuma led the opposition Umkhonto weSizwe Party, or MK, in the last election, despite remaining a member of the ANC. Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
Jacob Zuma was a member of the African National Congress, or ANC, for 65 years. The octogenarian politician joined the anti-apartheid movement as a young man in 1959. Like fellow ANC stalwart Nelson Mandela, he was jailed on Robben Island for his part in the fight against white minority rule. Also like Mandela, Zuma went on to serve as president after the advent of South Africa's democracy. But his association with the storied movement saw an ignoble end on Monday.
Former President Jacob Zuma has actively impugned the integrity of the ANC and campaigned to dislodge the ANC from power.
That was ANC Secretary General Fikile Mabalula explaining the party's decision to expel Zuma. Zuma, 82, was forced to resign in disgrace near the end of his second term as president in 2018 amid numerous corruption scandals. He is widely accused of enabling what is known in South Africa as state capture, basically the handing over of state-owned enterprises and even some ministries to his businessmen friends. He has always denied wrongdoing. Bitter at the ANC, Zuma threw his weight behind the newly formed Umkhonto weSizwe, or MK party, in December 2023. Despite his suspension from the party, he remained a member of the ANC while acting as the public face and leader of the populist MK party. While Zuma himself was barred from running for office due to a prior criminal conviction, he campaigned for MK using vicious rhetoric against his successor, President Cyril Ramaphosa. Despite all the corruption allegations against him, Zuma has always retained massive support in his home province of KwaZulu-Natal. MK did very well there in May 29 elections, which saw it become the third biggest party in South Africa with almost 15% of the vote. Despite MK's success, Zuma rejected the results, falsely claiming voting irregularities without any evidence. Mbalula also referenced this when announcing the expulsion.
Furthermore, former President Zuma has been running on a dangerous platform that casts doubt on our entire constitutional edifice. He has meted out a host of anti-revolutionary outbursts, including mischievously calling into question the credibility of our electoral processes. Without cause.
Official election results saw the ANC lose its parliamentary majority for the first time since the start of democracy in 1994, forcing it to form a coalition in order to govern. MK is now the official opposition in parliament, led by a Zuma-aligned, disgraced former judge. Professor David Everett of Johannesburg's Witwatersrand School of Governance said he was surprised only that it took the ANC so long to expel Zuma.
It shows very clearly that the balance of forces has swung very strongly against Jacob Zuma, and he doesn't have the support inside the ANC to try and defend himself.
But political analyst Cindy Leswana noted that the ANC had protected Zuma for years.
All of them have supported Jacob Zuma in one form or another and tolerated the DK in the ANC. So Zuma is one of the stars of the decay and demise of the African National Congress. That is his legacy.
Zuma's troubles are not over. He is due in court next year to face corruption charges over a 1999 arms deal. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Analysts say the performance of MK took away significant support from the ANC, which forced the party to enter into a coalition government with other parties after the May 29th elections. For more analysis, VOA's Peter Clody also reached David Everott, professor at the School of Governance at Wits University in Johannesburg.
I think my reaction is, what on earth took them so long?
Well, but do you think the former president is going to appeal this decision because the constitution of the party allows it?
I think the old man would. He's very Trumpian in the way that he will issue lawsuits and take everyone to court and try and litigate things. I have no doubt he'll appeal because it'll get him more headlines. It'll make more of his supporters who are still in the ANC wonder whether they shouldn't be leaving for his MK party. But, you know, you can't be a member of Party A, launch and run Party B with a deliberate aim of defeating Party A, and then appeal and look plaintive when Party A expels you. It's ludicrous at some level.
Well, the party says that the former president has 21 days to appeal the decision with the National Disciplinary Committee. But will this have any impact on Zuma at all?
No, if anything, he'll use it to his advantage. I mean, he'll claim to be the victim. He'll say that what he calls the ANC of Ramaphosa, which he characterizes as dominated by white monopoly capital, that they're out to get him, that he's yet again the victim of these dark forces. And so it'll really be playing to a gallery that he hopes will be sympathetic. I don't think he would. I mean, he may want to stay in the ANC. I have no idea. But then he shouldn't have launched a rival party. But I suspect he and his supporters will use this merely for media value. It'd be very difficult for MK as a party to come out and say, no, 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 he must remain a member of the ANC when he's their party leader. That would be quite ludicrous of them.
Some people are suggesting that his decision to champion or lead the MK party impacted the MK party during the recent May 29 general election, and that, they said, affected the ANC's chances of reclaiming majority in parliament. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's part of the story. I think the ANC was in very deep trouble long before MK and Zuma came along. I think he certainly put the dagger in and made the defeat worse than it might have been. But, you know, we were polling them 6 months out from the election. We polled them at 39 and they got 40 or 41 if you carry the decimals. And so, you know, the ANC, and that was long before MK existed or was even being discussed. So I think he merely just put the dagger in and twisted it. The ANC did this all by themselves. Did it to themselves, and they really can't blame Zuma. They have to have a long, hard look in the mirror, I'm afraid.
But do you think the ANC has the capability to look hard and long in the mirror at themselves, to take a holistic look at the party and its performance since it won elections in 1994?
Well, they're having an NEC, a National Executive Committee meeting today, in fact, in which that is the only topic, is why did we do so badly? And as someone who used to poll for the ANC, you know, from 1994 until the last election, not this most immediate one, we've been telling them for decades, you need to fix up your house. You're going downhill. This isn't something that will change by itself. And I think the ANC leadership and membership remained in denial until this election. And the real question, I think, is can they stop the slide? When you drop 18 points in an election, you're heading towards the dustbin of history.
That's David Everott, professor at Wits University in Johannesburg, speaking with my colleague Peter Clottie. During the U.S. Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, earlier this month, I met up with Charmian Penda, who heads the American Council for Africa, or ACA, in Cameroon. Penda says the council represents business opportunities for U.S. companies that exist in Cameroon, and it range from the oil, gas, and mining sectors to banking and telecommunications. Penda says the U.S. government can and should do much more to foster economic growth in Cameroon, whether it's Republicans or Democrats that's in charge of the White House.
ACA is a non-political organization, so we're not speaking or advocating on behalf of either political party. It has been very difficult for American companies who are doing business in Cameroon for a number of reasons. Some of the issues that they face are a high tax burden or issues enforcing contracts or judicial security. Now, when you look at how Americans are supposed to do business in Cameroon, they are bound by what is called the FCPA, which is the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. And what that does is prohibits American companies from accepting, like, bribes or, you know, money under the table to facilitate business. Meanwhile, other foreign companies don't have any similar legislation, so they may come in with large sums of money to help them secure contracts. This makes it very difficult for Americans to do business. And I say that because when, for example, if you look at some of the Asian companies, when they come in and they're doing business with their government. You're talking to the government. The government helps them with financing, personnel.
And so what do you want to see change? And I understand what the companies are that you deal with, investment interests, but
I don't think just in general there isn't enough attention being paid to the potential of doing business in Cameroon. I don't think we're using all the tools and resources that we have. I don't think we're doing enough having Congress advocate on behalf of American businesses that are doing business anywhere overseas, but particularly in Cameroon.
Wouldn't it be, you know, a lot of U.S. business people, men and women, consider it a risk to go to a country like Cameroon where there has been not very steady political government?
Well, actually, Cameroon has actually been a very stable country over the past 37 years, as long as the president Paul Biya has been in power. It has been relatively stable. It is true that there has been an ongoing conflict over the last few years, but by and large, Cameroon has been pretty stable. And while Cameroon does present some challenges, I think the U.S. government has to have a little more focus, and then also be more engaged with chambers of commerce, such as the American Council for Africa. We are on the ground, and so we know how business gets done and can provide information to the U.S. Embassy or the U.S. government, Congress, what have you, that they may not otherwise have. So we're looking for better engagement, more fluid communication with the U.S. government to help our American businesses flourish abroad.
And you know that the Biden administration not long ago just hosted the U.S.-Africa summit and is encouraging businesses to get more involved in many, many African countries. And as you said, there's obstacles, but in African countries, and it's trying to beef up the support among U.S. businesses. Would you not agree?
I think they're doing some, but it's not enough. They need to do much, much more. And I think that's more of a defensive tactic because, as you know, China has taken huge strides in Africa. And so the U.S. is seeing that they're less and less competitive. And honestly speaking, if you ask a Cameroonian, who do you think, you know, Cameroon's top trade partners are? I'm sure the U.S. does not figure in the top five.
That's Charmian Penda, director of the American Council for Africa in Cameroon. Penda has lived in Cameroon for the past 14 years, but was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin this month speaking to me during the Republican National Convention. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 30th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Gender Ethics in Liberia. When a 2023 study found that women were underrepresented and marginalized in the Liberian media industry and portrayed negatively in news coverage, a female journalist association set up a pilot program to bring about change. From Monrovia, Liberia, VOA's Sanunu Tort has more.
At Prime FM in Liberia's capital, Monrovia, Christophina Pinkinyene prepares to read the major news bulletin of the day. It is a career leap for the journalist. Until about 2 months ago, she worked mainly behind the scenes. Nyene is one of a handful of new female journalists to join Prime FM. With her colleagues focused on politics, Nyene's coverage of the environment and human rights was often overshadowed. And she says the help she received transitioning into a radio career was limited.
My confidence level, it was not high. I did not know how to write on Lee or real goodly. Sometimes when I read my stories, my editor would be like, what is this, Christophina? What is this?
But all changed when Prime FM joined the pilot gender ethics program. Nyana is now an anchor and has a mentor. The gender ethics policy is a response to a 2023 report by the Electoral Institute for Sustainable Democracy in Africa. The report found significant underrepresentation and marginalization of women in newsrooms and frequent objectification or degradation of them in news stories. That imbalance, says the Female Journalist Association of Liberia, or FIJAL, reduces women's representation in government, which in turn affects policy. The hostile climate came to the fore in the 2023 elections when the media focused on a candidate's old beauty pageant speeches instead of her policies. Lisa Tene Diaste is the president of FIJAL.
Everything about Woke Dolo was about her bikini. I think bikini or something, because she took part in the Miss Liberia and she was a former Miss Liberia. Everything about her life, that her transition from the pageantry to political, everything came back on pageantry.
Seeing a need for a change, FIJAL formed and piloted a policy in 30 media institutions, the SSAs.
So that particular policy will take into account how many growth of women in the newsroom, growth of reporting women or gender stories, and making sure women can also take on the airwaves to talk about their issues and also report issues as well.
FIJAL offers internships, career mentorships, and the Newsroom Leaders Fellowship. It's already seeing results, says Lamakoli, desk editor for Women's TV, Liberia.
I improve my leadership ability, improve my writing skills, my capacity to nurture and manage the newsroom and improve, and because of that, I was upgraded to become editor of my newsroom.
The pilot is also bringing other changes too. Prime Communications Network now has a dedicated gender desk to produce content that highlights Liberian women, says network director Jutonu Uwatekoli.
So if you bring a story, I want to see the gender link. I want to see the same missile last story.
After its promising start, FIJAL hopes that more media outlets will adopt the policy and that newsrooms and audiences will see a more balanced representation of women. Sena Anutot, VOA News, Monrovia.
The head of an organization called Concerned Nigeria for the Protection of Human Rights and the Rule of Law says lawyers will provide legal aid to protesters during the much-anticipated demonstrations that are set to begin next month against hunger and bad governance. Attorney Deji Adeyanju in the Nigerian capital Abuja tells VOA's Peter Clotty that citizens will demand immediate solutions to hunger, inflation, and widespread unemployment.
It's been long coming because of the economic hardship in the country, widespread hunger, extreme unemployment, hyperinflation that citizens are battling with, prices of goods, this is has quadrupled, even petrol that the economy is dependent on, since we do not export, we import almost and we do not produce as well. We import almost goods, all the goods that is used in Nigeria. You know, petrol has quadrupled in price, and this invariably affects every other goods and services in the country. So it's more or less an end bad governance protest and a hunger protest as well. It's a protest against hunger.
Deji, I understand lawyers like you are providing legal cover for some of these protesters. Is that true?
Yes, across the country. We have a team of lawyers in the whole country. In almost every state, we have volunteer lawyers who are offering pro bono services for would-be protesters that are likely to be harassed or arrested by the police or other security agencies.
Officials of the government, including top security officers, are expressing concern that they have intelligence that Boko Haram and other hoodlums may hijack the protest and cause mayhem.
Yes, we also have intelligence that the security agencies are the ones sponsoring people to come and disrupt the protests. No Nigerian from all our interactions have shown any desire whatsoever to cause mayhem during this protest period. Nigerians want to just put pressure on government, for government to do the right thing so that they can ameliorate the suffering of the teeming, unemployed and Nigerian people.
The organizers of this protest are saying they are going to make non-negotiable demands to the federal government to resolve. But how do you protest? Want to have a genuine dialogue, but put forth non-negotiable demands.
Yes, because government, even in the process of these 3 weeks agitation for a protest, government should have met certain demands, even if they cannot meet all. The government has not shown goodwill or intention to, you know, even be responsible. You know, some of the demands include, but not limited to, issues of bringing full subsidy back so that fuel prices are reverted to 165 naira per liter. Also, reduction in the cost of governance. The ministers are too many. The aides of government are too many. We are wasting too much on servicing politicians. Instead of subsidizing for the poor people, we are subsidizing politicians.
That's attorney Deji Adinyaju speaking with my colleague Peter Clotty in Abuja. A number of Western governments are urging their citizens to leave Lebanon as tensions between Israel and Iran-backed Hezbollah militants escalate. Dale Gavlak reports from Amman.
Lebanon is bracing for an Israeli military response to a suspected Hezbollah rocket strike that killed 12 Druze children and young people on a football field in the Golan Heights on Saturday. Israel has said it would retaliate, and civilians are bracing for what officials said could be days of fighting. The United States, Germany, Britain, and France are among the governments issuing travel warnings to their citizens, calling on them to leave Lebanon immediately or avoid travel there as the risk of conflict widens. Rina Bitter, Assistant Secretary for Consular Affairs at the U.S. Embassy in Beirut, told Americans in Lebanon to create a crisis plan of action and leave before the crisis begins in a video on X, formerly Twitter.
I recommend U.S. citizens develop a crisis plan of action and leave before a crisis begins. Regularly scheduled commercial transportation is always the best option while local communications and transportation infrastructure are intact and operating normally.
Germany has told its citizens to urgently leave Lebanon, saying air travel could soon be suspended and that a further escalation could stop air travel from Beirut Airport. Already, Germany's Lufthansa, Swiss International Airlines, Air France, and Turkish Airlines have suspended flights to Beirut, citing the security situation in Lebanon. In remarks to CNN, Lebanon's caretaker foreign minister, Abdullah Bou Habib, said the Lebanese government can do little to rein in Hezbollah, but added that the lines of communication remain open.
The choice is to us always is to do bad and worse. I don't think we can do it, but we always communicate with them. Prime Minister, of course, the speaker speaks with them. There is a lot of negotiations to stop now because they started it in support of what's going on in Gaza.
Hezbollah said two of its members were killed in an Israeli drone strike in southern Lebanon on Monday morning. Dale Gavlak, VOA News, Amman, Jordan.
And that wraps it up for this Tuesday, July 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, wishing you a great day. We'll see you again tomorrow morning.
Africa presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries.
Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500 and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source for news.